2019 was supposed to be the year of the one seed. And after the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, it looked like it would be. Duke, Carolina, Gonzaga, and Virginia all almost appeared invincible. And then, as it always does, March happened. Auburn made its first Final Four in school history. Texas Tech made its first Final Four in school history. Michigan State made its first since 2015, and UVA made its first since 1984. Will recent blue bloods, UVA and Michigan State, be the favorites, or will Auburn and Texas Tech pull off upsets and advance to the national championship? Find out on this episode of Stone Cold Sports Talk.
Fires to the end zone. Touchdown! Alabama wins!
This is episode 11 of Stone Cold Sports Talk, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Thank you for making us part of your day. I'm Luke Stone. Joining me, as always, is Associate Editor Jay Banzette. And the Final Four is finally here. Oh, God, that was a terrible pun, but we're going to leave it in there anyway. And UVA was the only number one seed to survive. Michigan State pulled off a kind of shocker by defeating Duke on Sunday. And Texas Tech and Auburn won fantastic games on Saturday and Sunday, respectively, to advance to their first Final Fours in school history. So, Jay, let's dive right in here into the analysis of the first national semifinal at 6:09 p.m. on CBS. The number one Virginia Cavaliers will be facing the fifth seed from the South region?
Midwest.
From the Midwest region, the Auburn Tigers, who have been on an absolute hot streak recently. They have not lost since before the SEC tournament. Jay, who has the upper hand and why?
Well, as a Carolina fan, I give advice to any UVA fan, so you specifically, but any other Virginia fans, you do not want to run into Auburn right now. They, even without Chima Okeke, a starter who could stretch the floor for them and add height on the defensive end and length.
After he tore his ACL.
Yes. Auburn is still... They're playing with house money, and here's why. They're, as you said, they haven't lost since before the SEC tournament, where they beat Tennessee by
20 points.
20 in the SEC championship game. They beat Carolina 97-80, and that was a full strength Carolina squad, too. That wasn't an injured, nobody significant was injured for Carolina. They just beat them straight up.
This team has not lost since. February? Is that can't be right.
Since
they haven't
February
lost since Kentucky beat them by 27, and I guess you could say they got their revenge on them on Sunday by defeating them in overtime to advance to their first ever Final Four. But this team in March has been unbelievable.
Yes.
They've been on an incredible hot streak. Bryce Brown and Jared Harper?
Jared Harper.
Bryce Brown and Jared Harper are one of the best, or make up one of the best guard tandems in the country. And, of course, they're running into a UVA team that has had some slow starts in the tournament. And if you fall behind early against a team that can shoot like they can shoot, then you'll be in trouble. However, the one thing that worries me about Auburn is if they start like they started against Kentucky, if they start like they started against Kentucky in the Final Four, I don't know if there will be any coming back for them. Because the difference with Kentucky is they play at such a high pace and run such an up-tempo system that Auburn was able to get a lot of possessions. But if UVA gets a 10 or... I think Kentucky's largest lead was 12 or 13. If UVA can get a lead that large in the first half, the way they slow down that offense, I don't know if there will be a way back for Auburn, unless they somehow turn their shooting on. But usually shooting is a game-by-game thing, not usually a half-by-half thing.
Well, yeah. What's the old cliche? You win by the three, you die by the three. Mm-hmm. Auburn is just that. They, in the SEC championship against Tennessee, and this kind of sums up Auburn's strategy right here. They shot 38 three-pointers and 24 twos. So I won't say they're the Golden State Warriors, but they certainly try to play like them as much as possible.
They were 15 for 40 against Tennessee in the SEC championship. And then in that massacre last Friday night against the North Carolina Tar Heels, they shot 17 for 37. They shot 46% from three, which is actually higher than Carolina shot from the floor the entire night.
Yes. Auburn made 13 of those threes in the second half, and so they got it cooking.
Now, of course, we can't talk about UVA being in this Final Four without talking about one of the craziest finishes I have ever seen, at least to regulation.
I think it's the game of the tournament so far, even surpassing UCF-Duke.
I think the crazy thing about that game was UCF-Duke didn't go shot for shot like Purdue UVA went for the last 8 minutes there. Because there were times when Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy and Carson Edwards were just trading these dagger threes that shouldn't have gone in. But the ridiculous thing about that game, of course, is that final possession, the final possession of regulation where Ty Jerome intentionally misses the free throw. Diakite tips it out. Kihei Clark runs it down with 3 seconds, has the presence of mind to find Diakite right down there on the block. And Diakite, who is not the best jump shooter, somehow finds a way to make this sort of circus shot go in. Literally with a tenth of a second.
He shot a Joakim Noah style, kind of two-handed, just kind of like a volleyball set kind of thing.
So I think for UVA, they also have not necessarily as much of a sense of playing with house money as Auburn did, as Auburn does have for that matter. But I think UVA still does have this sense of they got here basically on luck and some really good execution at the end, so they ought to make the best of it, because it would suck to have made that comeback effort like they did against Purdue and have it all basically be for naught.
Yes, that would. UVA, I thought they outplayed Purdue. Well, obviously they did not play Carson Edwards, who had 42. Ridiculous. His draft stock rose like a rocket over the tournament. And Auburn plays very similarly to Carolina. And so,
what, run and gun jack up threes?
Not jack up threes, but just the up-tempo, hit the offensive glass, get out in transition even after a made basket kind of thing. So you may not like this, but I'll use recent Virginia-Carolina results
to extrapolate this result
to help me gauge who's going to win this Final Four matchup. And we'll talk about scores later, but I expect Auburn to be in the low 70s in terms of points.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair.
I think they're. I guarantee you they're not going to hit 97 like they did against Carolina, but they're also not going to hit.
Especially, is this going to be in? Is this going to be U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis? Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
And I know I hate the cliche around Final Four time of, well, you know, shooting in a different building is really different, but I think it actually is, and yes. I don't think the only team that could ever shoot such a high percentage from three in a football stadium was Villanova last year, because they were just an unbelievable shooting team.
Yes. Or if Syracuse ever got some good shooters, I wouldn't expect to see a difference between playing in the Carrier Dome or somewhere else.
But neither of these teams, especially in the Auburn-UVA matchup, seems to be a team that is going to have just enough pure shooters to be able to make an extraordinarily high amount of their threes in the first round of the Final Four.
Yes. If you look at what Virginia has done since the ACC tournament in terms of giving up points, they gave up 56, 69 to Florida State, 56, 51, 49, and then the 75 in overtime to Purdue.
And that was an anomaly because Carson Edwards had 45?
42.
42.
And so
I think this is going to be one of those games where first to 65 wins. I don't think that's
inconceivable. That's not out of the question for sure. I mean, I think it depends on what kind of Auburn team we get. If we get the Auburn team that played in the first half against Kentucky, or specifically the first 10 minutes,
first to 55 might win.
If Virginia hits 50, they'll win. But if we get the Auburn team that played against Carolina and Tennessee, it could be the first to 80. Be honest with you, but this is just such a it's a defensive team versus a entirely offensive team in my mind. So it's hard to gauge the scores of those games,
because Auburn's defense, as much as they were able to maybe clamp down when they had time to set up plays, it didn't seem down the stretch. I mean, what they were up by 6 or 7 in the final 4 minutes against Kentucky and PJ Washington. I know UVA doesn't have any scorers like that, like PJ Washington, guys who are just big physical
DeAndre Hunter's
threes that can get. Yeah, Hunter's the closest thing you get, but no one else has that size. But the crazy thing was Auburn couldn't muster the strength from their big men to actually shut down PJ Washington down the stretch and stop him from getting stuff at the rim. And with as creative a layup makers as Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy are, I think that'll be a significant issue for Auburn to deal with. And I hope that without Okiki they can I don't hope, because I want UVA to win the whole thing, but I would hope for their sake that they're able to get someone else to step up and be more of an enforcer down near the rim, because they were giving Kentucky everything they wanted down the stretch. They just happened to shoot a higher percentage.
Yes. So who you got in this game, buddy? I know you're a UVA supporter. Your dad went there. But brother currently goes there too.
I would like to think UVA can win comfortably, but this tournament I have just become resigned to the fact that even considering how relatively close the games against Oklahoma and Gardner-Webb were, I've just become resigned to the fact that UVA will not win a game in March or April, I guess, by more than five. I think UVA wins close. I think that they seem to be a bit less stupid in late game situations than Auburn does, because there were times when I was watching Auburn down the stretch, especially against Kentucky, I just put my hands over my eyes and said, oh my God, what on earth are they doing? So I think UVA close. I think UVA probably mid-high 60s, something like that. So I'm going to say UVA 68 to 65. I don't know what the spread is. Let's see what the spread is.
Five and a half?
Okay, so Auburn plus 5.5 is one of the locks of the week.
I'm going to actually flip the script here. And this is not because I have...
Not because
I had a fifth and sixth grade girlfriend who was an Auburn fan. Okay, Auburn. I think Auburn has too much offense for Virginia. They're too fast. Well, that and there's just something about them.
There's a scrappiness. There's a scrappiness.
Bruce Pearl has brought an attitude of
sweating through all of your blue button downs.
That. And we will not be outplayed by the other opponent, or we as in Auburn. I think they find a way somehow to score enough points to beat UVA and move on to their first ever national championship. I don't know how they're going to do it. Austin Wiley's going to be huge as a big man for Auburn. He's going to have to control the glass against DeAndre Hunter. But I think they get enough offensive guard play from Jared Harper and Bryce Brown to get out of the Final Four with a slim victory. So give me Auburn 72, UVA 65.
Wow, so you have Auburn, you totally have it flipped. So you have Auburn covering and then winning by what UVA spread was supposed to be.
Yes.
That's something. Here's the one, I know people always assign arbitrary stats to to a team's performance and say whether or not that's going to win, or whether or not that's going to be enough to win. First of all, I think if Auburn gets above 70, they'll win. UVA can't give up 70. They don't have the scoring power for that, or at least they haven't shown this. They had it earlier in the season, but with how they've been shooting this tournament, I don't think it's a sustainable model. And also, I think that if UVA doesn't have at least a plus 8 or 9 offensive rebound margin, they're not going to have a chance, because they have way too much size Jay Huff, Jack Salt, and DeAndre Hunter not to be able to just totally out-rebound Auburn.
I won't say offensive. I'll give you total rebounding. They need to be above 9.
Because that was the thing that saved them against Purdue, is they were getting a ton of second chance points late. Obviously, Diakite's little tip out was possibly the most notable second chance points in the history of the NCAA tournament, maybe. Richard Hamilton, Rayshon Hamilton, the dude on UConn who had that one that got tipped back to him 4 separate times.
Oh yes,
against Washington. John Calhoun running down the court.
Yes.
Pumping his fist. And there's something else I want to unpack from what you just said. Did you just invoke your fifth and sixth grade girlfriend as a potential bias towards Auburn?
Yes.
Okay.
She and I talk to this day. She's a very good friend of mine.
Okay. I've never heard, I mean, I can understand that having a disclaimer like, hey, they just smacked UNC, so I know it might seem like I just want them to win the national championship, which isn't entirely untrue. However, I think that invoking not only an ex-girlfriend, but an ex-girlfriend from late elementary, early middle school.
Ago,
yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Is interesting, and I'll just leave it at that. We'll head...
we'll move on.
We'll head into the next semifinal now, which is, what, 8-something, probably?
8-2, what time is it? I know it's on CBS.
I'm going to guess 8:49.
8?
How many times did we go through?
We went through that. 8:49.
8:49, yes. I was right. So 8:49, in reality, probably 9:09 or 9:05. The number 2 seed Michigan State Spartans against the number 3 seed from the West region, Texas Tech Red Raiders, who made their first ever Final Four. Huge congratulations to Chris Beard and Jared Culver, especially because they were a team that lost to Bob Huggins in the... Bob Huggins lost 10 in... 14?
I don't know. They were the 10 seed, which is the last seed in the Big 12. That's all.
Which doesn't make sense. Last time I checked, 12 is greater than 10. So if you're the Big 12, you should have at least 12 teams. And if you're the Big 10, you should have no more than, I don't know.
Yes, the Big 10 has 12 teams and the Big 12 has 10 teams.
I think they should really change. No, I thought the Big 10 has 14 now because of Rutgers.
That's what made it 12.
Is that really?
Rutgers and
Maryland. I thought Rutgers and Maryland made it 14 because what made it 12 was Nebraska and Iowa State. I don't know. Conference realignment sucks, people. Just remember that. So the spread right now, I want to say, are we fact checking this?
We are checking this. Wait a minute. The Big Ten has...
I'm telling you, it's 7 per division.
It is, so 14.
So Nebraska...
That's even more ridiculous.
The Big 14. Also, just a note while we're talking about conferences with numbers in their names, the Pac-12 is still the worst Power 5 conference. You know, why don't we...
In every major sport that I know of. For lacrosse people around there, they're no lacrosse power. Basketball, they got, what, 3 teams in, a 12 seed, Washington, who lost in the round of 32, and Arizona State, who didn't make it out of the first 4. Football, Washington won the conference at 8-5.
Hey, they almost beat Ohio State, though. That was something, I guess.
Sort of.
Anyway, so first of all, I think we should address the fact that it's absolutely reprehensible that a coach is as abusive and as mean as Tom Izzo has been to his players by yelling about them for not crashing the boards is still allowed to coach in the Final Four. He should be suspended and fired immediately, right?
Wrong.
Can we... It's ridiculous. Okay. I can understand if that were a middle school coach.
I'm sick of handing out participation trophies.
I'm considerably more... I don't want to assign the word liberal to this, but I'll use it. I'm considerably more liberal when it comes to coaches being hard on players than you are. I know that you had some coaches growing up who were maybe yellers, but who were still influential parts of your life, and I'm not going to dispute that at all. But here's what I will say: Division I athletics is basically it's a business now, and even beside that, I mean, these are grown men who we have. I know you. You can say they're kids. They're definitely still young. But these are grown men. If they can't take a coach getting in their face about them not rebounding well enough, I mean, I guarantee there are college kids who are managers at Chipotle or whatnot, or cashiers at Chipotle who get chewed out if they do something wrong. Like, this is nothing new. Seeing coaches chew out players is... I'm not saying it's always a good thing. I think there are times when coaches can cross the line. But this is the tournament. Like Tom Izzo said, this is the tournament. There are no second chances. We can't afford to have something like that. And I think the support that his players came out and gave him, and his past players came out and gave him after this. Like, I know Miles Bridges tweeted about it and said something like, "That's my coach," when he chewed this player out. And even the kid who got chewed out was like, "No, like, really, I'm fine, guys. Like, you don't need to be concerned about this." It'd be one thing if this were reckoning, but this is Division I men's college basketball, and this is
at the highest level.
This is the highest level and the highest stakes tournament, basically, that exists almost in all of sports.
Probably in all of sports because it's single elimination.
Mm-hmm. And Michigan State was close in that game with Bradley in the first round, too. I don't fault Tom Izzo for being upset with his lack of rebounding effort, because you can tell there's a respect and this love and a really great relationship that he has with his players.
It shows he cares.
It shows he cares.
If you just sit back and don't say anything, you're just like, oh,
yeah.
So what? Why are we here? Let's get out of here.
Yeah. Anyway, that note aside, Texas Tech, as we mentioned far too many times, I'm sure, and as everyone has mentioned far too many times in sports media, and its first ever Final Four, which I find it ironic they did that after one of the most influential players in their program, Zaire Smith,
left.
Went to the NBA. Jarrett Culver, was he Big 12 Player of the Year? He was first team All Big 12, for sure. I believe
Dedrick Lawson got Player of the Year from Kansas, but...
He's been a huge part of this team, and then also the biggest heartwarming story that there's been, I think. I don't know if you saw this anywhere on social media recently, Jay, but Moretti. I don't know what his first name is. Davide Moretti is a sophomore shooting guard for Texas Tech, and he is, as you can guess by his last name being Moretti, from Italy. And his parents had never been able to see him play at Texas Tech, and the school, I believe, was kind enough to fly his family out for the Elite Eight game against Gonzaga right after he was in a meeting saying that he plays for his family. Another heartwarming story why March is fantastic. So let's get into the game side of this. Obviously, Texas Tech coming off a huge victory against Gonzaga in which they only made 9 threes, which was, I guess, a bit... seemed somewhat out of character for them.
Yeah, they play kind of similarly to Auburn, but the big thing with Texas Tech, and this, I love this. I love me some defense in every sport, and you know that.
I do know that.
Texas Tech, believe it or not, I heard last week after they beat Gonzaga, is statistically more dominant a defense than Virginia. They ranked number one in the country in defensive efficiency. Combine that with a Big 12-type offense, and you have a team that is more than dangerous and more than capable of winning the national championship.
And I feel foolish because I picked them to lose in the round of 32 to Buffalo because I thought Buffalo was the be-all, end-all Cinderella of the tournament. And I had very low expectations for them after they lost to West Virginia. It seemed like this was a team that was struggling without a true number one star. Jarrett Culver had been a bit lacking down the stretch, and he was definitely lacking in the Big 12 tournament when it came down to it against West Virginia. And I thought this team just didn't have enough leadership from a player perspective to make a deep run in the tournament. And certainly I didn't think they had what it took to make the Final Four. But they, despite all odds, Chris Beard got his guys to rally. And he had them pull out some really impressive performances, especially in their victories over Michigan and Buffalo.
The halftime score of that Michigan game in the Sweet 16 was Texas Tech 24, Michigan 16.
That was probably also a Texas Tech versus someone else in the Big 12 end of first quarter score at some point this year.
Yes, in football?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Michigan, as we all know, they were a two seed. They were the runner-up in the Big Ten. They are not a bad basketball team. They beat Carolina by 17 at home earlier in the year. And they scored 16 points in 20 minutes against Chris Beard's team. And then they got outscored by 11 in the second half. That's not a way to win, is when you get score 16 points in the first half and then get outscored by double digits in the second half. Let's just say that Texas Tech is a very, very good basketball team and capable of beating quite literally anybody in the country.
But you know who else had some gutsy performances down the stretch in the
Michigan NCAA State tournament?
Michigan State. The win against Duke was
phenomenal as a Carolina fan.
And also a phenomenal game to watch. Of course, you had Jim Nance and Bill Raftoriani, who I think Raftor gave us an onions after.
He did give us an onion. It was an onions call after the Goins three, yes. For those of you who don't know, Luke Stone and I absolutely love when Bill Raftery, do you have a good impression of it? I'm kind of sick right now. I can't give a good
one. I'm not going to disrespect Bill Raftery by attempting to impersonate him. I think that would be rude.
Essentially,
if you want to do a John Gruden impression, man, I'll give you one of that. I'm not going to give you Bill Raftery, okay?
Essentially, whenever a big shot is made in a basketball game and Bill Raftery's on the call, he'll give you an onions. That was terrible.
Onions.
Or
it's a little more shrill than that, but not in a bad way, in a more exciting way.
And then at the beginning of the games, when just right after the tip off, whichever team's on defense, he'll identify what type of defense they're playing. So if it's man to man,
he doesn't say man to man. He goes Texas Tech, man to man.
Listen for it in the Final Four. You'll laugh, and it's really funny. And he's
now the true tragedy of the Final Four is that we're not going to get our favorite play-by-play commentator. Maybe I think
in all
sports right now, Ian Eagle. For those of you who don't know who he is, Ian Eagle calls
Brooklyn Nets basketball.
Yeah, calls Brooklyn Nets basketball for I guess that's Yes Network up in New York. I'm not sure. He calls the NCAA tournament. Had some great calls between the end of the Houston-Kentucky game and of the subsequent Auburn-Kentucky game, and also had a great game in the first round of Maryland-LSU when I think it was
second round. Waters.
Yeah, when Tremont Waters hit his game-winning layup for one of the only buzzer beaters of the tournament. That was kind of disappointing.
There weren't too many this year.
A lot of good games on the stretch, though. And he also was there for the Miami Miracle. See, he's one of the best commentators in the game currently. And unfortunately, Jim Nantz. I love Jim Nantz, but Ian Eagle, he just brings something else.
Eagle gets overshadowed by Jim Nantz's voice.
Yes. I mean, and I think he's part of the network with the best all-around broadcasting. Between Jim Nantz and Tony Romo for NFL primetime games, then you have Brad Nessler and Gary Danielson for SEC on CBS. There are a lot of guys over at CBS that get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, that's pretty probably true.
I think that we're delving into more pop culture than just straight game analysis. I think this is somewhat more interesting for sports nerds, for the 10 people that will listen to this. So let's go into more analysis. I think I already said that with that, and then we got sidetracked again. Cassius Winston, obviously a great player. Kenny Goins, a great player. And then on the Texas Tech side, Davide Moretti and Jarrett Culver are the kind of the 1-2 punch for Texas Tech. And who's got the advantage? BPI, Basketball Power Index. It wouldn't make sense to use a Football Power Index for this game, especially because both teams are football teams that are subpar. Yeah. BPI gives Michigan State a 61.3% chance to win. So that basically means in March it's a toss-up.
Yeah. Well, with Michigan State, you already mentioned Cassius Winston, the point guard, who in my mind is the best point guard in the country, should win the Bob Cousy Award. He was a first-team All-American with – that came out yesterday with R.J. Barrett, Zion Williamson, Ja Morant, and Grant Williams from Tennessee. He runs – the Michigan State team, but well, I won't say by himself, but he is. If he were not there, this team may or may not make the tournament. So, he is the critical point for Michigan State. And against Duke, he had 20 points, 10 assists. But primarily, when they got down to Duke, throughout points in the game, he was the one who brought them back. He was the one who got them on the quick little 4-0 spurts, the 6-0 spurts that kept them going, got them back in the game against Duke. And so he's going to be huge, obviously. But a guy we have not really talked about, well, we haven't talked about at all in this show, is Matt McQuaid. And I think his role is going to be huge because
he played 39 minutes against Duke, for the record.
Yes. Only scored 9 points. But that's because Xavier Tillman picked up 19 behind Winston's 20. And obviously Texas Tech is going to garner all its attention on Cassius Winston because as he goes, Michigan State goes. And they're an excellent defensive team. And so somebody's going to need to step up outside of Winston. And I think McQuaid, I think he's a senior. Is he a senior?
Yes.
Yes. Senior from Duncanville, Texas.
Irony.
This is his last chance to play college basketball. I think he's in a position to step up and contribute.
To be a Dante DiVincenzo sized underdog hero in the Final Four.
Probably not drop as many points as DiVincenzo did, but have the same kind of impact, especially if he can play enough defense and not turn the ball over enough. He can make a serious impact in this game.
So you've got, so with that being said, what's your prediction? Who you got?
Ooh. Get past you first. I got to think about mine.
Okay. I would love to see Michigan State UVA.
Oh, I would
in the
too.
National championship. No, that would be a fascinating game with two coaches who have been, I don't want to say down on their luck because it makes it sound like they haven't achieved a lot in the last couple of years, but two schools that have definitely had disappointing tournament runs the last two or three seasons.
Well, yeah, Michigan State hadn't gotten out of the first weekend since that Final Four run in 2015 until this year.
So I'm going to say Michigan State, just because they have a slight advantage in coaching. I think Chris Beard is one of the best kind of up-and-coming coaches in all of college basketball right now, but I think beating Tom Izzo in a Final Four is always difficult. I think Michigan State wins close, and I think it's probably a relatively high-scoring game. I'm going to say,
with Texas Tech's defense, high score, are you kidding me?
75-72.
Holy smokes. All right. Well, I went against you on the first game, but I'm going to pick with you on this one. I'm going to take Michigan State, albeit I'm going to take them. I'm not going to put it quite like UConn Butler in 2011.
But pretty darn
close. What was that score, 48-40, whatever.
47-41.
Did either team hit 50?
No, I don't think so.
I won't have it like that, but I'll keep it close. I'll go Michigan State, 62, Texas Tech, 61.
I looked at the stats of that Butler-UConn game the other day. I think Butler made eight field goals.
Yeah.
Eight field goals.
In 40 minutes of basketball.
Roughly one every 5 minutes. My God, that's a bad pace.
Yeah.
The most unwatchable national championship game with UNC Gonzaga in a close second, just because of the amount of fouls.
The Carolina Gonzaga game, even as a Carolina fan,
Shemek
for life,
he was a ruse.
Yes,
he's also playing in Poland right now,
which makes sense. He is Polish.
Mm-hmm.
But that,
well, you're
that,
telling me a guy. You're telling me a guy with 11 consonants in his first name and the last name Karnowski might be Polish.
I don't know.
Wow. So Jay, with that, we'll move into an abbreviated segment of facts or fake news because we spent 30 minutes talking basketball. So let's move into football.
Oh.
Facts or fake news?
The Browns winning the Super Bowl?
No, I would never make that call this early. We actually have missed a lot of football with free agency and all these moves. So. Facts or fake news, Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry will both have at least 1,100 yards next season.
Fake news. I don't remember the last time. When was that'd be an interesting stat to find out when the last time
two receivers
on the same team had 1,100 yards. But I think one gets probably 1,200, the other gets 950.
Who do you think is going to be the lead there?
Odell will probably have the lead, but...
The one thing with Landry,
I wouldn't be surprised.
The thing that amazed me with Jarvis Landry is he had, in my opinion, one of the worst starting quarterbacks in the NFL for his entire career in Miami.
Ryan Tannehill.
Even so, thank God the Wicked Witch is dead.
good Lord,
I can't.
Where is he now?
Tennessee. He got traded.
God bless.
For draft picks, which is great because I don't want to take any more unnecessary cap space for some overrated skill position players, which seems to be all the Dolphins do when they trade. They either get draft picks that suck or contracts they don't want. Trading Robert Quinn, not a bad move either. But back to this.
How about them Cowboys?
The amazing thing about Jarvis Landry is that he still had, I think he led the NFL in, or he had the most receptions by a player in his first two or three.
I thought it was five.
What, seasons of his career? Was that what
Yes.
There was some crazy stat where you're like, oh my God, Landry was actually catching passes in Miami, which is hard to believe because if you've ever seen Ryan Tannehill throw a football, the idea that someone could actually catch it seems to be laughable. Second facts or fake news for you, Jay. Facts or fake news, the Alliance of American Football is dead forever.
Ooh. I think that is facts because no. Seeing how quickly it folded for the time being, I'm not sure how somebody can see a positive upside with putting enough money in to get the league back in if it's just going to die that quickly again. So I'm going to call that facts. As much as I love to watch it, it was a great league.
I think going on Twitter yesterday and seeing that it was dead was one of the saddest but least surprising things that I've ever seen, because the problem that you run into with a spring football league like that is, especially in its infancy, it's so hard to get the money necessary to get it off the ground, and all it takes is one greedy financier to want to alter the pacing or alter the vision of the league, and then him pulling his money obviously cause everything to go to waste. I think it's a shame because there were some guys who were going to use that to bounce back and hope maybe get into the NFL. I think it was going to be the last chance you for the NFL, basically, except the difference is that those guys were still getting paid. Not great, but they were still getting some money, which is more than you can say for people who go to junior college in, what, Mississippi?
Yes, East Mississippi Community College. I thought it served as like a... Or it was going to serve as a G League for the NFL kind of thing.
And that was what I don't know who the guy, he owns the Carolina Hurricanes. That was what his vision for it was too. And that was also the same one that founder, I want to say Nate Ebersole, maybe, and Bill Polian, former Colts GM.
I love Bill
Polian. That was the one that was the vision they had for it too. And he just wanted to make it go faster, but I don't think the NFL was interested in. The NFL is one of the largest organizations and the most valuable sports league in the entire world. Things don't happen overnight for the NFL. They have people they need to talk to. They have owners they need to consult, and they just wrapped up their owners' meetings. So it was sad that it's gone, but I think it unfortunately is going to be gone forever. And Jay, I'll give you facts or fake news number three. We'll head to the NFL draft. Three defensive linemen will be drafted in the top six. Defensive players. Let's go defensive players.
Well, it's funny you say that because I'm in the process of making my mock draft 1.0, which should be out. I'm trying early next week after the Final Four. I think that is definitely facts because, well, I'll give you a sneak peek. Right now I have Kyler Murray going 1 overall to the Cardinals. Then from there.
Hashtag Haskins to Miami.
Maybe.
I wish.
Number two pick
Josh Allen?
Is the San Francisco 49ers. They take the best available and get Nick Bosa. So there's one. Number three is New York Jets. I think they take Josh Allen, defensive end from Kentucky. So there's two.
Well, and a real then, flex defensive end. He's a more modern defensive end. He's not like a big.
Yeah, well, he's an edge rusher. He's a Von Miller kind of player. Yeah. Then number four, my favorite player in the draft, Bo Watts' favorite player in the draft, Quinny Williams, defensive tackle from Alabama. Quite literally unblockable. He could be the next Aaron Donald. I'm not kidding.
And he still has braces too, which is cute.
Yes, he's adorable. But anyways,
we're cutting that.
I think yes. You said three in top six. I'll go four in top five.
Wow.
So, yes, that's definitely facts. I'll go even stretch that a little bit further.
All right, that is – we've taken enough of your time. If you made it this far, first of all, congratulations. You're probably the only one of maybe two or three. Thank you all for tuning in. This has been episode 11 of Stone Cold Sports Talk. He's Jay Banzette. I'm Luke Stone, and that is all. You know, I was going to try to turn that into a cooler ending, but I said Stone Cold Sports Talk too recently. Anyway, whatever. Have a great day. Also, as an addendum, we are going to end – with some of our favorite moments from our favorite announcer, Ian Eagle.
10 seconds left. Tannehill will throw it, and this will end it after the shovel, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle. Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake! A miracle!
Davis wants to do it himself.
Denied! P.J. Washington! A big-time block! Kentucky down by one. Hero! Oh! Tyler Hero!
Waters makes his move. 3 seconds. Waters to the rim. Layup! Good!
1.6! Maryland has no timeouts. Ayala, three-quarter court. It's over! March equals madness!